This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. Hangover Part 2, and we have the first question. She's coming to her seat with the first question, so here we go.
The first question. I was wondering, the one to four stars answered the question, what was the most challenging thing that happened to you in Thailand?
It can be funny, it can be sad, it can be
true, and it can be false.
Well, I think unfortunately for Ed, it was the food.
I had a very serious hurdle to get past the first week, which was severe food poisoning.
That lasted throughout the movie, pretty much.
Well, it never fully went away. And maybe I should just leave the rest up to your imagination. Let's just say my body exploded.
How about you, Jack?
That's okay, ma'am. Please, I'm sorry. These guys have the giggles. The thing that I think the city itself was just getting used to the city for the first few days, and the jet lag was a little bit tough. But once you got there and you got settled in, the people are so brilliantly nice that you feel welcome, and it's a great, great society. It really is.
You know, what was odd was challenging. I thought it was the sheer number of people that were constantly on set. There's something about doing a production in Bangkok where there's just tons of people all over the place, and Todd, to his credit, thank God, likes a lean set, and that just makes it easier to work. So that was a challenge, having to adapt to there just being so many bodies around all the time.
How about Justin?
I spend most of the time by the pool, so the funniest thing that happened to me was I ordered a Diet Coke once, and I got a regular Coke.
Somebody's had some media training.
What's that?
Did you answer the question?
Oh, I think in a nutshell, Bangkok is just a very crowded, very chaotic, and very hot city. And so I think we all had just challenges, just like Bradley was saying, dealing with the crowds and the chaos. But ultimately the movie is about mayhem, and to make a movie about mayhem, sometimes you have to go to mayhem. So I think it all found its way into the movie, and it helped.
Hi guys, the movie was really great. I thought it was fun.
Thank you.
I felt like Mike Tyson was kind of an unofficial member of the Wolfpack. I really enjoyed his little cameo at the end. And I want to talk about how he was used again, because I was rumored that Mel Gibson might have been used. And so could the filmmakers and the actors talk about working with him again on this?
Mike was amazing. It was great to see him. First of all, he looked fantastic. He lost about 50 pounds, and he was in great spirits. And, the beautiful thing about him is, and he promoted the first one. I mean, we really got to spend a lot of time with him, actually, not just the shooting of the first Hangover. So we all got to know him. And my memory of Mike is, before his day of shooting in Krabi, which is a resort town, you'd see him walking around, looked like he was prepping for a fight. He had his headphones on and his robe, and he was really, he took it so seriously. And it was also great to have him in the last scene, when we're looking at the photographs.
Yeah, for me, I think Mike is just such an iconic part of the first Hangover, even though he wasn't in it a ton. Sometimes people will be like, you remember The Hangover, that movie with Mike Tyson? Like, he became very identified, or The Hangover became very identified with Mike's image. So, personally, it felt really, I thought it was really important to bring him back. One, because we all love him so much, and two, I think he just was such a surprise and so great in the movie and just sort of one of those fun things. So we couldn't be more excited when I called him and asked him to do it, and he came all the way to Krabi in Thailand and hung out with us. So, yeah, it was fun to have him. Yes, sir.
Hi, Bill Higgins.
Oh,
no.
Todd. Oh, whatever. He's there. Who cares? Let's go.
That's okay, Bill. If you want to go ahead,
go ahead, Bill.
You next. You've got the mic.
Can the actors talk about the joys and the occasional pains of working with a co-star like Crystal?
Crystal has turned out to be just kind of this miracle monkey. She's incredible. She can do anything. And Todd certainly. I remember when we were talking about it, And he was saying, you know, there's going to be this drug-dealing mule that's a monkey, and it's going to smoke. And I was like, how the hell are you going to pull this off? And then, you know, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is this sort of montage. It's Curtis Mayfield, right?
Yeah, Pusher Man.
This is one of the greatest parts of the movie. The only downside to Crystal is she's very long, I guess, claws at their head, you know. And you don't want to get Crystal around an elephant. And there was one scene where we were walking down the street, and there was an elephant, and she sort of destroyed my shoulder, which was not great.
My favorite part about Crystal is her trainer was this guy named Tom, who was a sweet guy, but whenever he needed Crystal to do something, he would literally just say, "Crystal, jump on the table, jump on the table, jump on the table, jump on the table," and then Crystal would do it. And somehow it became, I don't know if Crystal actually understands English, or if she just sort of like is able to read the energy based on what he's saying, but I just found it so hilarious that her trainer would just repeat an English command over and over and over again until Crystal eventually did what she needed to do.
You guys managed to make another raunchy movie. Is there any even raunchier stuff that'll be on the DVD or scenes that didn't make it into the movie?
It's not so much raunchier stuff. Yeah, I don't know that it's raunchier stuff for the DVD. You know, basically, it's very clear to me, this is like my seventh movie, so I kind of know what the line is with the MPAA and even with audiences, sort of where you can kind of push it and whatnot. So it's not that we have a bunch of raunchier stuff even for the DVD. I mean, I think there will be deleted scenes and some things like you see, but it's not like we cut anything out really because it was too raunchy at this point, you know.
Obviously, if you see the movie.
We put things in because they're too raunchy.
Or any other fun extras you got in Bangkok that you want to show us later?
Well, yeah, I mean, we did some special things for the DVD, if that's what you're talking about, the DVD. We did some special things. I think Ken did a really cool thing where Mr. Chow gives us a tour of Bangkok and his version of Bangkok and how he kind of runs the joint. That I think is so we did like special things like that for sure.
Hi, Bill Higgins. Bradley and Todd, if you were, if someone was going to Thailand, where would you recommend them going? Do you have any places within PG limits?
No, I mean, for me, I mean, honestly, Bangkok is just one of the most beautiful. I mean, that's where you have to go. Bangkok's just the most, it's a very cosmopolitan city. I mean, you know, in our movie, we shot a lot in the Chinatown district of Bangkok. We really took a liking to the look and the feel of that area. But Bangkok as a city is just a beautiful, like I said, unbelievable cosmopolitan city, and there's so much. I mean, we were there. I was there for about 3 months and still felt like I could have stayed longer, just to, more to see. But Thailand in general is beautiful. These guys went to a lot of the islands at some point.
Yeah, but we spent Christmas in Chiang Mai, which is incredible. But I would echo what Todd's saying. For me, I just sort of fell in love with Bangkok. We spent 2 weeks in a resort town, and I couldn't wait to get back to Bangkok.
Were there any like a restaurant that you ate at? Bars, this is a great place to go.
Well, you know, I actually took a liking to Top Menu, which was a Chinese restaurant that I ate a lot in Bangkok.
Yeah, definitely check out Top Menu.
Is this real?
It was a Starbucks.
It's called Top Menu.
In China. Yeah, right across from the Starbucks.
It literally is just like any Chinese takeout place in New York City.
I will totally disagree with you. No.
No, he's wrong. It is great.
It's great. It's great. How dare you, Ed?
Okay.
Is the budget such that you couldn't go to?
He wonders why he got food poisoning. That attitude.
The way he talked.
You didn't go to any upscale places? Did you run up the Warner's budget?
Well, Zach did.
There's another place called Very Top Menu. Don't go to bottom shelf.
We've got two of the writers. We've got Craig and, of course, Scott and Todd. The challenge would be, do you keep the same formula? We know, you know, we like what we liked from Hangover 1, but now we've got Hangover 2. Did you think about, well, we should just totally change it up, or is it, this is what everyone wants? We want those pictures. We want to have the wedding. We want to have someone lost again.
Yeah, I mean, we thought about that all the time. That was essentially the first month of sitting in the room together was the debate over how different it should be. I mean, we kept saying same but different. In the end, people are going to come to a sequel. They want a sequel because of what they enjoyed about the first one. And I think where we landed was right. You stay within the template of what the first one is, but you make it, you make the stakes higher, you make it a lot darker. And the other thing that we did, I think, that was right was to acknowledge that the characters had already been through the experience the first time. And so they don't, you know, in the first movie, they wake up, there's a tiger and a baby in the room, and then they go and have breakfast. They can't do that this time. They know that it could, how bad it could get. So, you know, I think we landed on the right blend.
Well, yeah, just to add to that, I mean, I think we were aware that the fun part of the Hangover, the first Hangover for me, is obviously the guys are really funny in it and the chemistry and all that, but it's also a mystery, and we didn't want to lose that investigative element that is present in the first one, because I think that keeps people sort of leaning forward on their seat and involved in the story. So it was something we made a conscious decision, like you said, early on, that we were going to stick with that template. We kind of owned, quote unquote, owned that template, and we were going to embrace it.
It was really fun to see, for me, and for us to sit down in a room and figure out what these guys are doing now. We haven't seen them in years. What are they up to now? You get to see Stu Price's office, and you get to see, you know, Alan living at home in his bedroom, and to catch up with these guys. You know, these are four classic comedy characters, I feel like. And
excuse me, sir, we don't know who you are.
If you guys need anything, let me know.
Nancy kind of took my question, but I want to ask you guys about coming back and revisiting your characters. And you know, I mean, like most actors, you always feel like your job is left undone after you play a role. And I'm just wondering, what was it that you were able to bring to your characters this time that you felt was unfinished in the first Hangover?
Well, I think that's part of the reason why there was so much room for the second one, because there was so much unfinished. I mean, you really didn't get to know the characters. The narrative, which was really this mystery, this ticking clock, took precedent in the first one. And I think the difference between this one and the second one, that one and this one, is this movie's more about the dynamic of the three guys. And you really get to know them, and for example, like for me, watching the first one, it can almost be boiled down to one joke. The whole movie is a setup, and the punchline are the credits. When you get to the end of this movie, I'm excited to see the credits, but that's not what I've been thinking about the whole movie. I got very caught up in what happened to Stu and how they've dealt with the dynamic, and what Alan did, and it's much more about that, which I found it to be a much more pleasing movie, sort of as a viewer.
I think the first movie was we were defining those characters and discovering them ourselves, and they were really kind of more in archetype. They were more just conventional archetypes in a way that we just added our own kind of accents and inflections to. When it came time for the second movie, it was very exciting because, just to echo what Bradley said, we were able to add dimension to these characters in a way because we'd already done the homework. You knew who they were, you knew what their relationships were, and Craig and Todd and Scott gave us a lot of fun stuff that just fleshes these guys out. As Scott said, getting to go to Stu's office, dental office, like it's just more layers on these guys that is fun to explore, and it's onion layers peeling back. It's a lot of fun.
And it was obviously a conscious decision by Todd to do that because the movie breathes more. There's more room for it just in terms of the timing of the cuts than the first one. It just has a different musicality to it, this movie.
Zach? On your character?
One of the big differences was this.
Your outfit?
Was the outfit. No, I think what these guys had touched on, the sequel is, I think you want the audience, or Todd wanted to see, or we all wanted to see, us kind of turning against each other a bit, which was fun to watch. I mean, it kind of calls for it, for Phil and Stu and also kind of all clash. And even, you know, Phil and I have a strong like a relationship that's kind of, I admire him, but he gets mad at me, and he's been real gentle with me in the first one, but this one I think he's at his wit's end. So I think that was kind of something new that we explored. And as Scott said, and as Ed was saying, that to go behind the scenes of the to see people in their environment, to see Alan in his bedroom was really, I think, is really kind of fun.
Is he crazier this time?
I think that he's just, I think he's in a lot of mental trouble for the rest of his life, yeah.
My question is for Ed and Bradley and Zach. It seems like you guys had a great time with Asian women over there. Especially that you had your character has a fiance who is Asian. I'm going to ask you guys about what impression you guys get from Asian women. On camera, off camera, you guys working with many Asian women. So could you talk about that?
The people in Bangkok in general are beautiful, men and women. It's just such a beautiful aesthetic. It's incredible, and certainly the women are gorgeous over there. And there's just, but this, it's not even the aesthetic. There's just something about the spirit of the people there. I mean, they call it the land of a thousand smiles, and there's sort of reason for that. There's just an openness and a gentility and. You agree?
No, I was thinking about something else, I swear.
I just wasn't listening.
Which is very infectious. There's something about the energy of the women and the people there that is infectious and you want to be around. And that's why I certainly, one of the reasons I fell in love with Bangkok and would go back in a heartbeat.
I've been dedicated to the same woman for a number of years, and I don't look at other women. Wait, hold on. And I also would like to say,
it's a beautiful country, a beautiful culture, and people are fabulous. All the people.
So, it's a bit of a weird question, you know. Right? I mean, let's be serious.
I think we answered it.
Yeah. Mr. Jong, is it Jong, Ken Jong?
Oh,
over
yes,
here.
Sir.
Over here.
Oh, hi.
Where's here?
Oh, there you go. You're a funny guy.
And, thank you.
Willing to take one for the project, I guess. In the scene where you stand up after being covered up, is that really you?
That's a personal question, but yes. Yes, sorry.
All right, guys, this question is for Todd Phillips.
Yeah.
I can totally see that you get Zach's style and tone of comedy. Did you let him improvise a lot of his lines in this part, in this movie?
You know, we do, certainly there's a lot of improvised lines in the movie. We don't do a ton of improvisation in general, like on set. We kind of more do it off to the side in the morning where the four of us will get together and we'll just kind of, not rewrite the scene, but
make some notes
and Zach will say, how about this line there, how about this? And then, of course, while we're shooting, these guys are always free to add and do stuff like that. But it's not like a lot of people think it's just a sort of made-up movie, you know, a lot of improv, a lot of free-form.
It's not Larry David kind of
thing. No, but you know, it'd be a bad director if I had these guys here and was like, no, just read this line and say it like that. You know, Zach and Ed and Bradley, I mean, Bradley has great improv in that scene in IHOP when he goes, what is the line? It was one of my favorite improvs in the movie from Bradley, which is...
Drink up.
Drink up. We're at a bachelor party. Yeah. Drink up. Oh, I forgot. We're at an IHOP. Like that's something Bradley just throws in right there. So things like that we're free to do. Yeah.
Cool. Now, Zach, here's a question right here, buddy. The fat guy, the fat Puerto Rican over here.
Oh, got it.
First question, Zach. How come there were no Puerto Ricans in Hangover? No, I'm just kidding. Gotta throw the Latino thing. But no, Zach, I'm asking this out of a friend of mine on the internet who's a big fan. He's asking why you never developed the Nathaniel Buckner character.
Quickly, I'll just say that it just never happened. I don't have enough discipline to do it. Between you, he and I.
Is it jokes between
you? Yes, okay. He has a friend on the internet.
On MySpace.
Oh.
question here. I have been to Bangkok, and a lot of that was believable because, no, it didn't happen to me, but it's a mayhem. So my question, though, is about the women. I've never seen more agreeable women who knew their men were out involved in various levels of mayhem. I wanted to ask the writers to comment on that. Because I would never take my boyfriend to Thailand.
I didn't take my boyfriend to Thailand either. I'm not sure how to... I don't think that's a question for the writers at all. That's really exact question.
Wait, no. But what is the actual...
The roles of the women in the... They just seem to be so...
They went... Okay.
They just seem...
But you have to understand, they went to a wedding.
Yeah, they didn't go
to... a wedding in Bangkok. I mean,
in Thailand, yeah.
What is there to agree to? That's where the wedding
they
is.
They woke up in Bangkok.
The guys woke up in Bangkok. The women didn't agree.
This.
Yeah, please.
One of the things is there's a dark side in all of us.
Yes.
So... Women who know perhaps that their men have a dark side. Mm. Was there any thought given to how you cast the women or wrote about the women? Were these women who...
Well, I mean, I think the thing is that Stu has a demon in him, and he's always kept that sort of quelled, maybe, especially in this presence of this new relationship. So I don't know that she was so aware of how deep or how dark that demon in Stu can get. But the fact that they got married in Thailand was solely because she's Asian American, her parents are Thai. You know, and that's where they live. So, you know, as far as like Phil's wife, who we knew from the first one, or Justin's
Tracy.
Wife Sasha, you know, they're gonna go there because that's where the destination wedding is. You know what I mean?
People get married in Thailand all the time.
Yeah, at these resorts. Yeah, yeah.
But I think the guys themselves are as horrified at what they discover that they've done as anybody else. So when they find out what they've done the night before, when they had that sort of that dark experience, I think they're as surprised as anybody.
I would also presume that wedding scene at the end is sort of like everyone is happy to see each other, happy that everyone's safe and alive, and that there might be some couples therapy happening afterwards.
But Justin, didn't you want to go with them on that journey? I mean, you left the campfire.
Of course I would love to spend time with them, but I, you know, when I got the script and I saw what Doug was doing, I was very excited just because it was a fantastic script, and I have total faith in Todd and everyone else. I'm just happy to be a part of it in general. I do craft service on this movie.
And this question is for Todd. Can you talk about casting Mason Lee? Do you know his father, Ann Lee, personally? And do you, you know, talk to him about this role? Because it's his first role.
Yeah, when we, you know, Mason came in like a lot of actors come in to read a part. I actually didn't know it was Ang Lee's son until I think the table read when we had already cast him. And I was talking to him, and it turned out he's Ang Lee's son. Well, I love Ang Lee, obviously. And then I remember I asked Mason, I said, do you think you can get your dad to shoot second unit? And Mason, I think, was nervous, and he didn't know I was joking. And he's like, I'll call him. I could see, but he's doing a movie in Taiwan. And I was like, okay, but, you know. So, but yeah, he was a great find and a great kid. And yeah, you're right. I don't know how many people know that, but the guy who played Teddy, it's Ang Lee, the director Ang Lee's son.
I had a question. Sorry.
Right here.
About Alan, Zach's character's dream sequence or where he's remembering and the use of children for the characters. Could you guys, the writers, speak to why Alan is thinking of everyone as children and when he's remembering what happened?
Well, you know, that was... Todd had... There's a line in the first movie where Ed says, you know, don't let the beard fool you, he's just a child. And Alan really is just a child, and we were trying to figure out, in part, this is, you know, part of the unwinding of the plot, how are you going to get from point A to point B, and what are the clues? And at some point you get very bored with finding clues like Scooby-Doo. You're looking for something more interesting. And we had this idea that he could meditate and remember something, but I think it was Todd who said that he actually... He's not just that he sees the world the way a child does. He actually sees the world in children. That is...
Well, he sees his friends as children. And to me, it was like sort of the Michael Jackson just idea. You know, like Michael, I really believe, thought he was a young kid, you know, and I think, like, and so he
surround themselves with, like, I think that's how Alan sees the world. In the first movie, Alan says he can't go within 200 feet of a Starbucks, I mean, of a junior high or a Chuck E. Cheese. And he says that because, not because he's a child molester, he's not. He's just somebody who hangs out with a skateboard at the local junior high because he just wants to be friends. Right?
Yes.
So it's how he sees himself. There are adults in his, like if you notice in the flashbacks, there are adults, but his posse, his crew are just 12-year-old boys.
People that he values are 12-year-old boys.
Yeah, everyone in the wolf pack, he sees as a 12-year-old kid.
Do you have an opinion?
Yes, I do. I think what they said was pretty good.
As mentioned, you do spend a portion of the movie with no clothes on. When you got the script, were you nervous at all about showing skating in? And do you ever give your wife, like, any heads up?
Oh, yeah. I run everything by my wife before I do anything. So I had full permission to do all the nudity prior to filming. And she, I'm very blessed I have such a supportive wife that is willing to, she's secure with letting me embarrass myself. And she always says to me that these movies are good for men because they always, after watching me, they always go home feeling good about themselves. So. I wish I was lying. She said that.
Hey guys, you've recommended some restaurants. Can you recommend a really good whorehouse?
Oh my God.
I'm just joking.
Oh.
Really? Sure. I know Ian, he's not joking.
Where would you take this next?
What's that?
Assume you're going to do another one.
Oh.
What?
No, If we were to do a third one, and quite honestly, we really haven't talked about it. We just finished the movie 2 weeks ago. This is the first time we've all been together in a while. And if we were to do a third one, if the audience, if the desire was there, I mean, I think we have a very clear idea where that would head. And it's certainly not in the same template that you've seen these movies. And obviously, we always envisioned it as a trilogy, as you can imagine. But the third would be very much a finale and an ending. And the most I could say about it, what's in my head, and again, I haven't discussed it with these actors, is that it is not following that template, but a very much a new idea. As far as where it takes place, you know, I said in the other, you know, I'm very open. Like the Olympic Committee to being pitched and presented cities, flown around with wine and women and bribed, and then I will make my decision.
And the winner is Salt Lake City.
Different guys doing their own trilogy of Hangover.
A spin-off. Oh yeah, I mean, you know, listen. I mean, I love this world that we've created, and I love every actor in these movies, even all the ones that aren't here today. As well, so you know, who knows? We do a Mr. Chow movie. I haven't talked to Ken about it, but oh. Chow is definitely a man of mystery, much like Austin Powers, and he is obviously has a web that is woven deep in crime and women. And
that's not how I meant it. I meant you could find a different group of three great comedians.
Or yeah, please tell that to these guys in their ears.
Yeah, we're just like the kids in the Vacation movie.
Yeah, you just.
No, I would not see spinning it off like that. I thought you meant it in the other way. No, I wouldn't do that.
I have a question about the music. Could you talk about where Down Easter Alexa came from, and also Allentown? Could you talk about that song?
Well, that all came early on in just the idea of Bill Breschke, who's the production designer, and myself talking about Alan's bedroom, and I wanted to see one of those big Billy Joel glass houses posters in his bedroom because it just seemed like the kind of guy that he would really connect with the song. I love Billy Joel, by the way, but Alan just sort of latches on to certain random things. And then we, I think Downeaster Alexa, or Downeaster, I think it's the proper title, is like Billy Joel's greatest song. And I love the way it's used, even though it's sort of funny that he's listening to it on his iPod or his Zune, I mean, I'm sorry. I just think it's a very powerful, great song, and then we just had this kind of runner that Alan loves Billy Joel, and then, you know, Allentown came about. And that wasn't in the script, that was something we all decided in Bangkok, hey, let's try something. We actually thought it was going to be just for the DVD, that Allentown idea, and then Craig and I wrote a version of it, and we went ahead and did it. Yeah.
Kanye West too.
Kanye West what?
The music.
Yeah.
Kanye West.
I did. I love Kanye. It's not anything even specific. That's just a track I love. I just love the energy of how it kicks off, like that moment in the movie. And you know, music is just one of the tools a director has, sort of, with which to paint. And I think it's one of the most effective. And I take it very seriously and think about it a lot.
Can I ask you about the first film? Because it became such a phenomenon. I'm wondering, when you were shooting it, you know, did you have any sense that this was going to take off and be such an incredible success? And what do you think it was? Do you think it was your relationships together and that it was a great rapport on screen? And I think if there's another one, the Justin should be the four of them.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Who wants to answer that?
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. I think what Todd said is a major that not a lot of people talk about, is that inclusive quality that the movie has. It is about the characters, and I think the characters are very identifiable. But I think the fact that this detective story is a part of it, and that the audiences feel like they're included with this wolf pack, with these guys, and they're on this journey with them, I think that's the secret weapon of why it became such a big hit. Otherwise, I don't know about the other guys, but I still can't really wrap my head around the fact that it's become this cultural phenomenon. I don't think it's possible to really digest that.
Anybody else?
I think it's quite honestly, it's a bunch of things that sort of all planets aligned. I think it's what Justin just said. I think it's a lot to do with the unapologetic nature of the comedy. I think a lot of American comedies tend to apologize for their bad behavior in the last 10 minutes of the movie, and The Hangover just doesn't do that. It's like, fuck it, whatever, it's over, leave. It's just like, it just doesn't apologize.
The title is fuck it, it's over, leave.
No, but you know what I mean? It just sort of has an unapologetic tone that I actually think people responded to, because we're used to a certain way of these stories being told.
By the way, if you went to a party at Todd's house, that's how he ends it.
I guess question for you, for the writers. There's a portion of the film, I thought it was hysterical, there's a portion where you drop the N-bomb a couple of times. Why? And did you feel that was the punchline you needed? And that, you know,
oh, Jack. Well, that's my fault, isn't it?
Where's the question?
It was over there.
Right. Oh, hey. Who's the question to? Because
Vibe magazine.
No, I didn't mean. No, who do you want to answer it? I mean, because
well, to the writers. When you guys sat there and you decided to use that as a punchline, you know, in the recap of, I think it was the text message, right?
Yeah. Yeah. From Chow to Alan.
Yeah. I'll answer. I think Alan. For someone to say that word so cluelessly, it's funny because it's wrong. It comes out of a place of ignorance, and Alan just doesn't know any better. He's just an idiot, so he gets away with that kind of thing. And it's kind of commenting, like, anybody that would say that so loosely is an idiot. So I don't think that word can be very inflammatory. But Alan is such a dimwit. You kind of, it's not excusable at all. But it's also just. You're making fun of people that would say that word, I think. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, and for me, it's really an illustration of how left-footed Alan is with the world. And that's, it's just what you do as writers and as a director and as an actor, is you sort of exhibit these qualities. You have you know, certain tools with which to work. And I think that moment right there is just very highlights how out of step and out of rhythm. In fact, because he goes, oh, he goes, on my way, niggas, and then he corrects it wrongly with the N-word, and it just shows you how backwards Alan's thinking is and out of step is. And I think that's what makes Alan's character fun, quite honestly.
Absolutely. And I thought it was funny. I mean, the delivery of it was funny. It was just a matter of, like, okay, damn, should we do this?
I think it was.
I mean, you don't casually type that one into a script. I mean, but you know,
well, that wasn't
the word starts with Mr. Chow. He's the one saying the text. Chow is a sociopath. I mean, let's understand. The man is a dangerous human being. Does terrible.
Right.
I mean, they need him in the first movie because he jumps out of the trunk, beats them savagely, and then the second time they see him, he literally orders his man to ram them with a truck. So, I mean, he's a dangerous, bad person. So you can.
But he's also a pseudo-gangster who obviously uses that word, Chow does, in that way.
Oh, yeah.
And then Alan, of course, in his left foot, in his misinterprets it, and I think that's sort of the best way to describe it. Right?
Yeah, fuck off, go home.
not sure who to direct this to, but I think a large part of comedy is often surprise, especially unapologetic. I was going to use outrageous, but unapologetic is a nice way of expressing it. So is it frustrating to you that some of the surprises are just all over the place, whether it was the kerfuffle over the cameo in the tattoo shop, or now the discussion this morning of Mike Tyson in there? People are going to be expecting that rather than be surprised by it, and it, does it mute the comedy for you?
I think there are abundant surprises in this movie, and it's sort of fun to hear about a nugget here or there, and then see where it fits in this movie. This is always, I feel like, this is always a conversation when promoting comedies. How many jokes do you put in the trailer? And I don't think it really matters, because when you're in the movie, it's a whole different presentation of that same information. And
well, and more specifically to that, it's an R-rated movie. You can only show so many. There's so many things we aren't able to show on TV and in the trailers just by nature of being R-rated. Most of you, I think, have seen the movie, so you know what I'm talking about. But there is a difference, you know, when you make the first Hangover, just to speak specifically to what you're saying, it's nice to make a comedy when you're flying under the radar. Because, you know, in this movie, obviously we were not under the radar. It was a sequel to a big comedy, biggest, you know, R-rated comedy of all time, and so it's not going to fly under the radar. So you have casting decisions that are getting announced before, or people dissecting casting decisions before we've even had a chance to shoot the scene. And that said, I kind of call it it's uptown problems. In other words, the fact that people are anticipating the movie so much that they want to talk about it, whether it's on the internet or on entertainment shows, it's kind of an uptown problem. You know, it's nice to have them talking about it. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, or I don't think that's what the right
yeah,
word.
Double-edged sword.
It's a single-edged sword, I guess.
Triple?
It's a spoon. But, yeah, you know.
Sawadee kap.
I'm from Thailand, and I know that Thailand tends to be a little bit conservative and very concerned about their image. Did you have to pull back on some of the jokes, or do they actually give you free rein to do whatever you want for this movie?
Again, I'm just going to take that because as a producer on the movie, I can tell you that we did have to show the script to Thai government and Thai film officials and the film office of Thailand. So they were really pretty great with what they saw. There are certain touchy, hot-button issues in Thailand that we just happened to not touch in the script that we naturally avoided. So everything there, you know, they read and saw, and I think, again, the same way Vegas really embraced the us filming The Hangover there and benefited from it afterwards, I think Bangkok was really happy to have The Hangover 2 there, and the Prime Minister visited the set. I mean, it wasn't like we were there shooting this small little movie. Everyone knew we were there. It was in the paper all the time, and we had a blast, and I think they were happy to have us. But you're right. I mean, a lot of people don't know. It's actually kind of a conservative...
Yeah.
City or culture.
And last question, in the turquoise.
Instead of apologizing at the end, as you say, you have photo shoots that you show the audience during the credits, so it's like the opposite of an apology, let's say.
Yeah.
I always wondered, it's got a kind of cinema verite quality about it, those photos. What's the process of shooting them? Is it just do the scene and then take a snapshot, or is there like a...
Yeah.
No,
I mean, you know, it's very much like, it's very random because, you know, we have these ideas of where and what we're going to shoot, you know, a scene of, like, okay, Teddy losing his finger. And then it's like, oh, you know, I saw this great Chinese restaurant. We're in the Chinatown section of Bangkok. Let's shoot the finger thing over there after we're done today. So I get the actors, and we literally shoot it with my regular camera because, like you said, it's a real verite. So we want it to feel very homemade, like you and your friends would post on Facebook. With your own little point-and-shoot camera. So we do it really sort of by the seat of our pants kind of stuff. Of course, we go and we clear with the restaurant, hey, we're going to shoot this thing here, is that cool? But it's not a lot of forethought is put into it outside of, like, this is the basic idea. And then we go and everybody just gets a little crazy, and it's always good when Chow's in the photos because Chow doesn't realize that we're not rolling sound, and he's literally acting it out to the fullest.
I always talk.
He always takes it just to the limit. He does the
far.
Full act. It's the greatest. It is one of the most amazing things to watch is when Chow just walks into a photo shoot scene, full on Mr. Chow, treating everybody like shit as Mr. Chow would. It's just the best.
There's also a lot of story in the picture at the end. There's a lot of plot that still has to be explained, that like how they got to different places, what happened last night, how did Teddy lose his finger, that kind of thing has to be all mapped out beforehand. So as fun as those things are to shoot, it's fun also to like inform everybody like what happened last night. It's kind of, it's stuff that even the guys themselves don't even know until they see the pictures.
So a lot of ad-libbing in the pictures, in other words, there.
Yeah, it's a real free-form sort of thing, and these guys will have ideas of what it should be and what to do in the pictures, and we just, I mean, like, all we have a lot of pictures done in that rundown motel room, you know, or hotel room, whatever, and all we had was a couple bags of cocaine, a monkey, a couple of guns, and we're just like, that was the idea, and then it's just, we shot 40, 50 pictures, and I love them all, and it was ridiculous photos.
It was a fake gun. The cocaine was real.
Do the actors get final say in those photos? I mean, you never know where you get your final say on.
Clearly not.
Thank you very much. Ed had the last word. Thank you guys for keeping the peace here and not, you know, using your flip phones and stuff and just doing your audio. Remember, it is going to be press.warnerbros.com. These guys have got to go.
I love the office.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you guys are winning props yourself.
Much.
That was great.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
Hey, all right.
A good way that I can
the what?
The last episode of The Office with all the guest stars.